Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hi, this is Gerald Austin of the Manhattans, and I love listening to Gospel Jazz Connection with D. Nice and Miss M. Hi, this is Gerald Austin of the Manhattans, and I love listening to Gospel Jazz Connection with D-Nice and Miss M.
Well, hello, world. Hello, city. And welcome to the Gospel Jazz Connection. This is D-Nice along with this Miss M. And you know what? We just heard George Brisson bringing you Breezin', and that's what we're doing today. It's such a beautiful day in the city of angels, and we're just going to be breezing. Now, you know, on the Gospel Jazz Connection, we bring you the best music and the best interviews out there. And this is no exception today, and I'm so proud to bring on a young man that I met during a taping of a television show that we do weekly, Health From the Inside Out. And this young man was very adamant about what he said, what he believed, and he walked the talk. And so I was so impressed. I said, young man, I've got to exchange cards with you. And so let me tell you a little about this man. Okay. Gene Nalbandian was born into a modest, culturally proud family. After much hard work in graduating from college, his dream comes true when he is signed by the Chicago Cubs as a promising pitcher, only to be plagued by an unexpected injury. This is the beginning, what Gene calls his takeaways, his setbacks, and how they become stepping stones to future successes or comebacks. With his book, it combines with his author his journey through entrepreneurship, marriage, divorce, and his heartwarming experiences as a single father. Tragedy strikes when his youngest son dies from a drug overdose. But this brings the author to a new place of peace and faith that will inspire you. His courage and determination, his courage will lift your spirits and elevate your understanding of life. And this young man I've got to know, and is a good friend of mine, he's been doing a lot of traveling around and talking to young folks about the trials that can beset them and how to stay strong and undercut them and overcome them through Jesus. Let me introduce you to Gene Nalbandian. Gene, you there?
Hi, Dee. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I just got back from a trip yesterday, and I was glad to get, always glad to hear from you, Dee.
Well, you know what, man? You've been on the road for a minute talking about your experiences, man. Your hometown has touted you as their golden child that's come back. And you've done a lot in the time since you first got your humble beginnings, man. I just read some of the prefaces on your book, that you have a new book out. So we'll talk about that a little later. But let's talk about some of your journeys that you did over the last month. You've been traveling back and forth to Fresno. Is that not correct?
That's true. I just got back from there. And, you know, the interesting thing, I got there, you know, I was on two television shows. And, you know, the impact that we got from that. And then I met so many people. I met the supervisor and the mayor's assistant in Fresno. And within 24 hours, Dee, people shared with me the deaths of their children that were an overdose to drugs. It's epidemic proportions that is going on. And that evening, I spoke before a large audience in Fresno with the supervisors from Fresno. We had the ambassador from Armenia there. And you know, the interesting thing, the people I saw in Fresno, especially in my community, are silent about their children's addiction to drugs. It's basically the fear of failure, and they want to hide behind it because they're all virtually ignorant and don't know what to do about it. And, you know, Right. There's disgrace. You know, there's disgrace in a lot of families. If one of your kids go bad, and they don't know how to reach out. And some are Christian families, some aren't. But, you know, I've told them, with God, all things are possible. We need to open our hearts more to the Lord so we can resonate and understand, you know, what epidemic this is.
Mm-hmm.
So... Well, I went on from there. You know, I told people, you know, the biggest problem with drugs, most people are getting addicted today, Dee, to Oxycontin. And, you know, I've studied this very carefully because my son had the affliction with Oxycontin only because he was a very renowned surfer. And, you know, he started with marijuana, and all the surfers take marijuana to relax. And you know what it does? It gives them a false self-esteem. But that's what they do to be bold and be able to master this sport. But my son had several injuries, one to the shoulder, one to the knee. He had a severe ear infection from surfing. So the doctors prescribed Oxycontin. Well, you know what? We all trust our doctors. And I was one that didn't even know what Oxycontin was at the time. And later I learned the pharmaceutical companies have put on marketing campaigns with doctors and try to sell their product. And in this case, the company, I won't name the company right now, but the company did such a blitz in marketing and told the doctors that Oxycontin works up to 12 hours. Now it's just come out that Oxycontin barely works up to 5 hours. And so when the pain wears off with people, whatever it is, it's from surgery or whether it's from severe injuries, whatever the case might be, they have to take another pill and up to maybe three pills in the prescribed area. You know, that is the beginning of addiction. And this is growing rapid. I just looked at the report from our studies and from our government last year. From the ages of 16 to 34, we had 500,000 overdose deaths in the United States. This does not include over 1.5 million teenage suicides that are happening. And you know what it's from? Peer pressure. It's from families not being close to their children. The family values are breaking down. There's too many distractions today that takes away from what the Lord has taught us. We need love is our support. We need to know. You know, right now, I can tell you, I have four living children, and there isn't a day that my kids will not call me and say, Dad, I love you. And, you know, that resonates with me because I know I'm in touch with my kids. Unfortunately, I love my son. He was a beautiful boy. He was handsome, articulate. He was a world-class surfer. But you know what? He sought recognition from his peer group. He wanted acceptance from a different culture. And I couldn't grasp it at that time. You know, it was so different to me. And now I just see how rampant it's going on in this country now, Dee.
And, you know, and the thing that you pointed out so vividly is that it doesn't matter the background or the culture or the ethnicity that the young person comes from. There's peer pressure everywhere, whether it comes from your school, whether it comes from your classmates, whether it comes from your job, your occupation, profession. There is always going to be some pressure in your life. It's how you handle it. And, you know, before, you know, they talked about different drugs and, you know, your gateway drug, and then you went to the whole perspective for a while was on the crack, on the cocaine and whatever. But you know what they've gotten away from? They've gotten away from the biggest drug dealers that America's ever come across, and that's the pharmaceutical aspect of it, to where doctors, whether it's unknowingly or, you know, said unwittingly or what, and seemingly to really just cross-reference each other, are giving out things to help with pain. But I had a pharmacist that came on and did a show with me, became a good friend of mine in the Fairfax area, where there's a lot of the elderly people there. They come in with different medications from different doctors. And he said, you know what, as a pharmacist, my job is to fill a prescription that comes across the counter. But as my spirit would have it, I always look and see what the prescription is saying. And if I find that there's a prescription that seems to look like it will counteract with something else they told me they had or something I found out that they're taking, then he says, I don't hesitate to call the doctor and bring him abreast on the difference because of the counteracting of medication. Now people are starting to open their eyes with Michael Jackson, with his Propofol, with Prince. They found out that he had overdosed. Now when it starts hitting these prominent people, then everybody wants to sit back and cry about it. But I mean, this is nothing that's new. Pharmacies have been putting out drugs. Doctors have been prescribing painkillers for years. Now people are finding a cheaper, or it's not necessarily cheaper because there's pharmaceutical companies that are charging big money, but they're now finding a different way to medicate to stay out of the pain. But like you said, you're thinking you're taking something that's going to last 12 hours, it lasts 5 hours, so you ended up taking 3 or 4 times the strength, and before you know it, your body builds up the toxicity, it also builds up resistance, and next thing you know, then you got to take more medication to keep you medicated, and a lot more ODs, a lot more. So, I mean, it's a very rampant problem, and nobody's talking about it. That's why I respect you so much, Gene. You got out there, and you're moving around, and you're talking about it. You took the pain and you turned it into, look, this is where it comes from. This is what we can try to do for. This is what the signs look like. And once people know what the signs look like, whether it's in their children, whether it's in themselves, they can start trying to put a cap on what it is that's going to keep them alive. You know what I'm saying? Because no matter what, we're going to always have pressure. Yeah. We're going to always have depression. I mean, that's going to be a part of our life as long as we're living on this earth. But to find a different way to, you know, to succumb to it other than prescriptions. You know, that's the easiest thing. Go down to the doctor, or like you were showing in your book, I read your book, very interesting. You can get prescriptions through other people that are getting prescriptions, that they're selling prescriptions. It's crazy, Gene.
Well, you know, Dee, you're hitting it really right on, because when the drugs wear off, these young people and even adults, they get very depressed and a high anxiety comes over them, and the need comes back to take more. Now, the power that this drugs have on you from OxyContin creates another need, because you begin to get in the dependency state. And they want something a little more potent, and that's where fentanyl comes in, the silent killer. Now, fentanyl is 100 times more powerful than morphine. And most people that are getting, who have cancer, and the pain is related to the severe pain that the people suffer with after going through chemotherapy, they give them morphine. And this basically puts people into a state where they're almost comatose. Now, just think, my son, toward the end, had 3 fentanyl patches. He was robbed of the Spirit of God in him. And my son was a born-again Christian. He told me again, when he came out of his third rehab, I had him in 3 different rehabs, the best in the country. All the money in the world is not going to save our kids. You can't save them with money. You have to resonate with their soul so they can recognize they need help, Dee. And that has to come from the mother in the father, whose love for each child resonates with that child. They may have peer pressure, but you know what? When the kids know The parents are there for every need. It can help them recognize their dependency. And this is something I really believe in very strongly. You know, God gives us wisdom. One of the great verses in the Bible says, wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom. Although it cost all you have, get understanding. This is God's message to you, me, every parent, every person, because that wisdom awakens our spirits to see what is really going on with each of our children. And I tried to recognize that, but, you know, you love your children so much. And I had economic power. So when my son would come to me, he said, Dad, I need this help. You know, my love for my son was to give him what I thought he needed. And that is not the case. You have to recognize, and I say this in all my talks, there's three things you have to recognize about drug addiction. There's three stages. I tell people, the first stage is when they start with uppers, you know, get them from their friends, or people say, let's take a hit on marijuana, or we've got this new heroin out there. It's very cheap. It's called Narco. It's a synthetic type, and it gives you an immediate high, and you think you have come in to the Holy Land. You are getting feelings of empowerment. And you feel so good, you didn't recognize how good you can feel. And, you know, they like that because it's empowerment and it gives them a self-esteem, okay? Now, mm-hmm. You get to the second stage, okay? You now want to empower yourself a little more. And those, you outgrow the first stage because you're around people now that you want acceptance from, you want recognition for whatever you're doing. And the need kind of grows where you get into the more addicting type drugs, okay? Oxycontin. It's another feeling of empowerment, but now it begins the start of dependency. Okay, now, in the second stage, the individual still has the power to recognize that he is getting dependent, or she is getting dependent, but now the critical time comes when the awareness and choice of that person becomes prevalent. Now, it's a critical time, and if there's nobody to help them, and if they're not able to do that, they stay influenced by peer pressure and the need for recognition, and that gets you to third stage, because when the drugs wear off, these people go into severe depression. They are now being robbed of the spirit that God has given to us all. It's being taken away, and you begin to lose your cognition and your consciousness. Now, if you don't get help, then you're going into third stage, and you cross the line. And when you cross that line, there's no point of return. You're going to gradually succumb to it, just like people succumb to cancer. Now, I took my son to three rehab in the country. The first one was called The Ranch in Nashville. They only take 18 people. It's $40,000 a month to get in. It's so expensive. We got my son in. Okay, he got in, and he was in with 17 other boys. And He was starting to deal with a few of his friends and dealing drugs. Do you know why they do that? To support their habit. They get in with groups, or they get in with doctors that will prescribe to them. They could buy pills in volume for a dollar, and they go sell them on the street for 40, 50 bucks. I see it all the time. That's what's going on. And these are in all of our communities. Right. And they reach out to kids like that. So my son gets in there. He's a very charismatic boy. And within the second week, he's recruiting 17 guys, telling them what he's doing. And they are all excited. Now they have purpose and they can have money by being with him. So what does he do? He breaks into their pharmacy. He steals all the Oxycontin and has given it to the guys. The supervisor there calls my son. I was out of the country then, and they kick him out. It's not the matter of losing the money. It was so sad that he used that opportunity. So I get back, and we were living in Orange County here, Newport Beach. So I get him into Hogue Hospital, which is supposed to be one of the best in Newport Beach. Now, they took him in, and we're able to go every Sunday because they have chapel service. And my son got involved with the Christian people that help these people. And then you have psychologists there. And there was 40 kids in there from 18 to 34. So I'd go every Sunday for 4 weeks and sit in with groups and listen. And, he's doing very well. Everybody's loving him, and he's in these groups. So they have a graduation, and he graduates. A psychologist tells me, your son is clean. He was a top of our class. You know, he's got a personality, charisma. I'm telling you, I was so happy. So they send him to a halfway house, to get you socially acclimated so you can go back into society and function normally. And they want you to go to Al-Anon, like for the AA people, and be a part of a support group. So he went over there, and he was in this place in Costa Mesa. And I get a call 2 days later, and a supervisor called. He says, your son, I'm kicking him out. He's talking back to me. He doesn't want any help. He knows everything. So I said, I can't believe this. So I find another place near where I am, and it's the strictest place to go. It's called Miramar. So I talked to him, and they said nobody can see him. This is a very tough love program. So I put him in there. So I don't hear anything for 30 days, and I get a call from the psychologist, and they tell me, Mr. Nalbanian, your son has passed with honors. He's clean. He's ready to go. So he come, they call me and say he would like you to pick you up. I pick him up, and he says, Dad, guess what? I found Jesus. I'm born again. I said, God, thank you. Thank you. It was an answer to prayer. Then he tells me he had a child with his girlfriend who was about 8 months, 9 months old. He says, Dad, I'm going to be a dad, and I'm going to raise my son, and you're going to be real proud of me, Dad. I said, I was on such a high because I really felt God had stepped in and did, again, the impossible. Is my way of believing. So I get a call in 2 days, and he says, guess what, Dad? Got a job. I said, really? I said, what are you going to be doing? He said, I'm going to be caddying at the Strawberry Farms golf course. One of his buddies was the pro out there. He says, I'm with tips and everything. I'm going to make about $300 a week. I says, great. Then he calls me 3 days later, and he says, Dad, I've got the best job. You won't believe it. I'm going to be caddying at the Pelican Hill Golf Course. And that's one of the top golf courses here in the Los Angeles area, D. So I am so proud that my son is now making his way in the world. He's going to be meeting people of influence, and they'll see that this kid has some potential. So I go out to Pelican Hill. I'm so proud, and I want to see him caddying out there because I said, you know, I'd like to play this golf course. So I go out to the pro shop, and I go to the pro, and I says, listen, I'm Derek Nalbandian's father, and I wanted to see him caddying. He says, what's his name? I says, Derek Nalbandian. He said, we don't have anybody here with that name. I can't believe it. Okay. So I give him a call. I says, Derek, let's have lunch. So, you know, I take him to lunch. I says, Derek, I went out to Pelican Hill yesterday, and they say you don't work there. Why would you tell me that? And he comes on, and he starts attacking me. He says, you don't trust me. He says, you'd never trust me. He said, I don't want you as a dad anymore. You're not my dad. He says, you've taken away everything. And he just goes on. He goes, he's like a raging bull. The only thing I could do was go home and cry. I've never experienced anything like that in my life, that one of my children would attack me and didn't want me as his dad. That's virtually a death blow to a parent. So what happens is my oldest daughter decides to take him back to Indiana because there's supposedly no drugs back there. I was so taken back by this. So he goes over there, and I told my daughter, she's taken on more than, I said, he is very ill. And, you know, he does not have control of himself. So he's there, and she says he's getting packages every day in the mail. And he tells her that the doctor just sent him some medication for his anxiety. Well, his buddies are sending him daily doses of Oxycontin. My daughter doesn't know it. She trusts him. So she gets him a job as a construction worker. And my daughter says, Dad, he's doing very well. He's so loving. But what happens is all they know how to do is lie and connive you to survive. Mm-hmm. That's what the drugs are doing. They are not your children anymore, D. Mm-hmm. They are now possessed by the evilness of drugs. And he goes after lunch with my daughter. He goes into a bedroom, and he goes into cardiac arrest because he takes another pop of what the doctor said was narco. And he mixed it with his Oxycontin. And like the coroner told me, he had two fentanyl patches on his back. And he said he was so medicated, he didn't even know who he was.
Mm.
And he went into cardiac arrest and died. Okay, so no parent wants the call to say, when my daughter called me, she said, Dad, Derek died. I can't tell you, I hope no other parents listening today, Dee, have to get a phone call like that, because it's the end all of all end alls.
Mm.
Wow. So you know what? It took me 2 years to try to figure this out. And, you know, I wrote the book as a catharsis.
Right, right.
To try to understand why this happened, because you know, you cry a lot, you feel like you weren't a good parent, and I knew I was a good parent. I mean I gave him everything I had, And maybe mm-hmm. it just was, I didn't understand enough about drugs. And that's why I wrote this. You know mm-hmm. what? All of us have our hurts in life. We have pain.
Right.
We face these things. And with the grace of God, we can overcome things because the takeaways we had, it's like I say in my books, the comebacks come. And you know what they are? They're miracles.
Right.
When I went through this, one verse stood out to me. Because I read the Bible every day, just for wisdom and understanding. And the verse says, "Give your heart to me, that I may speak to your uncertainty. Peace unto your worry, hope into your disillusionment, and joy into your sorrow."
Mm.
When I read that verse, you know, I can tell you the healing and the power that came to me. You know, we're never going to overcome the hurt of losing a loved one. You know, I live with it every day. It's been 3 years now, and, you know, I have beautiful memories. But, you know what really hit me the hardest? His little boy now is about 3 years old.
Mm.
And he comes to visit me, and he loves his daddy, and his name is Velzy. He was named after my son's favorite Versy, Dale Velzy, and there's a beach in Hawaii that's named after him that Derek used to surf there in Hawaii, next to the pipeline, and a very famous surfing area. So I said, I'm talking to my little grandson, and, you know, he says, "I love my daddy." He says, "You know, my daddy works in heaven for God."
Wow.
I said, "Oh, really?" He says, "Well, he works for Jesus because he's helping other people learn how to surf up there." It was so cute. It really hit me so hard. It, you cry on the inside, but that's his perception, Dee. So
It's such an avid story because a lot of people didn't realize what we're talking about, and it's so much work to be done, and I'm appreciating that you stepped out in faith as a man of God to take this on and show people and the young people that, you know, that this is a serious problem. And I know that me and you are going to be doing some work together and get some things together. We're going to attack this, man, one step at a time. Like I tell people, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And so it's changing the mindset. It's like making people realize that this is a real serious problem, and then showing them how they can trust God to help them to address the problem. You know what I'm saying? He did three things when he came here. We can do two of them. You know, we can feed people and we can educate people. But on top of that one, he renewed, he restored people. And so we are disciples of restorations by leading the light and showing him, lifting him up, that he could draw men unto him. So I appreciate you just coming on, man, and just opening our eyes to this today, man, because it's like an epidemic, and it took a lot for you to be able to bring this out, and I thank you for it. And we're going to be hearing more from you on this subject and some of the other things we'll be doing together, and I look forward to this working relationship we're developing. And God bless
thank
you. Thanks for taking the time.
God bless you, Dee. You're a beautiful man, and I'll do anything. I love your ministry, and you're a man of God, and God bless you and your work, too, okay?
Yes, I look forward to sitting down with you real soon.
Okay, yeah, I'll be in touch.
All right, no doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, Gene Albanian, thank you very much. And his book is Lamentations of a Dad. And we'll talk more about that in upcoming weeks. And he's going to be a part of the team. So we're going to continue to let you guys know what's going on with this very problem here of medications and how they can take over our lives. Meantime, in between time, this is Ms. M. This is D-Nice saying God bless. And let's go back to Ms. M with some more music on the Gospel Jazz Connection. So sit back, relax, and watch with your ears.
nights are lonely. Friends seem far away. Feels like you're losing. Hey, what's the use of trying? You may say, whoa.
Hold on a little longer until the light again.
After the light, things will be better.
After the night, our times won't last forever. After the night. with favor and carry them in the bosom of your love. Lord, you surround the righteous with favor and carry them in the bosom of your love. Lord, you surround the righteous with favor and cradle them in the hollow of your hand. Cradle them in your love. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all of my life. Blessing and honor thou hast bestowed on us. Your ears open, your eyes upon us. The righteous cry, you hear it then, Lord. You surround the righteous with them in the bosom of your love. Lord, you surround the righteous with favor and you cradle them in the hollow of your hand. Lord, you bless the righteous with favor. 24/7, Lord, you shower them from above. Yes, you shower them with your love. Once was young, but now I'm old, and I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor is he the begging. Yet though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. I'm talking about your favor, 24/7, I'm Lord, I thank you for my love. Play it, Mr. T-Man, would you please? Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Kirk Whalum. Welcome to The Gospel According to Jazz, Chapter 2.